And I think a really important part of leaders today is to help navigate your people, your workforce, through that never normal. Not to hide that, because I think that doesn't make sense, but to give that sense of comfort and reassurance that, yeah, there is going to be things happening, but let's figure out together how to maximize that. And I think that is where leaders play a crucial role today.
You're listening to the ISF podcast for your organization's better cybersecurity. Your host, ISF CEO Steve Durbin, is an expert in leadership, business culture transformation, and cyber strategies for today's top enterprises. I'm producer Tavia Gilbert. This week, we have a rare repeat guest on the podcast. Listeners may remember our conversation with innovator and thought leader Peter Hinson a few years ago. He's back to speak with Steve today about the post-pandemic future of work. Peter offers practical tips for leaders who are trying to prevent workforce burnout. He also discusses with Steve how boards can approach adopting new technologies like AI.
Peter, hi. Welcome back, and thanks for joining me in the studio today.
Pleasure, Steve.
So you and I last did this, I think, in 2019. It must have been in Dublin, before
COVID. Just before COVID.
That's right, yeah. World's a slightly different place now. But, you know, just to start, tell us, what have you been up to over the last 3-4 years?
Well, COVID was actually really busy. I did so many webinars. And in a strange way, I enjoyed that because although it's nice to be with, you know, a room filled with people, it was very convenient to actually be able to work so close from home.
Right.
I'm glad I didn't work at home because it was at that moment that I had the chance. I bought an old church to house one of my passions, my Apple collection. Mm-hmm. And then I really was glad that I had that as a location to do my webinars and my recordings. Because if I would have done that from home, I think my family would have gone absolutely nuts.
I mean, that's a positive spin that you've put on COVID there. I'm interested. Have you seen anything that businesses have kept that's been really positive that perhaps they wouldn't have been able to do if we hadn't had that whole COVID situation?
Well, I think what was really interesting about COVID is that I think when it was going on, a lot of people thought, this is the big one. Mm-hmm. And let's hope that, you know, post-pandemic, you know, if we ever get out, we're going to go back to the way it was.
Right.
And I think that has been abandoned. And of course, we all know what happened. Post-pandemic, we've got into the war in Ukraine, and then we've got into the economy that went just absolutely nuts, and then, you know, inflation. And it just seems to be constantly more and more and more change that has happened. Mm. And I think fundamentally, I think companies have started to realize that they need to understand that we're not going to go back to peace and quiet.
Right.
We're going to have an acceleration maybe of change. And that's what I started calling the never normal. One of the good things I think that we've gotten back from COVID or that we've retained from COVID is that I think the acceleration of the future of work has really happened. I think we're now seeing companies that clearly see that the way we did, you know, HR, employment and work pre-pandemic, we can't just hope that that is going to come back. And I think that is a fundamental change that I think was really something that the pandemic helped us with.
And how do you think business leaders in particular have coped with this shift, with this constant change, this acceleration, as you put it? Are they doing well or are there areas for improvement?
I think it's work in progress. Okay. And I think many companies have now started to realize that that never normal is probably the canvas that they have to work with in the next couple of years, maybe decades, that it's not going to go back to the way it was, mm-hmm. that there is going to be that constant volatility, that we need to adapt faster, that we need to rethink and, you know, be more open-minded, that we have to listen, you know, more attentively to all the changes that are happening and then respond faster than ever before. So the awareness is there. I think the way to then cement that into procedures, into governance, into mechanisms, that hasn't happened. You still see companies struggling with that. I give one example, mm-hmm. annual budgets. Right. Annual budgets is a great example of something that we're starting to realize it doesn't really work anymore because things might happen, things might evolve and change so quickly, so we're going to need a different mechanism to deal with that. So we've gotten to that awareness that some of the old ideas just, you know, don't function. but we haven't figured out what the replacement is. And I see companies trying and experimenting, you know, trying to build more of that agility and flexibility also in their planning processes and in their budgeting approaches. But, you know, that stronghold, that idea, that framework of an annual budget that we've held on to for such a long time is very difficult to actually give up. But I think it's exciting because I think in this never normal, we're going to see new mechanisms and new, you know, ideas and new concepts and new governance ideas that are going to, you know, come to fruition. But at this moment, we're still very much in that transition.
And what does that actually mean, do you think, for the people in the organization? Because, you know, one of the things that I notice is that a lot of organizations, yes, okay, they got through COVID, then they wanted to draw breath, big sigh of relief. But what we're talking about is this constant evolution, this constant change. And the challenge, I think, for a lot of organizations is how do you manage that? How do you still make sure that the people in the business are best equipped to deal with that? Because it's a very different way of working. And for some, it's hugely stressful.
It is. And I think that probably explains why there is so much depression and burnout that are happening inside organizations. Because a lot of that constant pressure is not just something that top executives or board members feel. It's what everybody feels.
Right.
And I think it seems to be accelerating. I think I have this theory that we're seeing, you know, S-curves, you know, being mainstreamed faster, that things happen just more and more quickly. And we all feel that. AI is a great example. I mean, let's be honest. I mean, it's just about a year that everybody started to really feel the power of generative AI. And I can get excited about this as a technologist, but as an individual, you think, oh my God, what is it going to mean to my skills, my job, my role? And I think a really important part of leaders today is to help navigate your people, your workforce through that never normal. Not to hide that, because I think that doesn't make sense, but to give that sense of comfort and reassurance that, yeah, there is going to be things happening, but let's figure out together how to maximize that. And I think that is where leaders play a crucial role today. That sense of urgency is vital, but you shouldn't bring that into an organization, you know, to scare people. It's, you know, they're frightened enough. How do you build that sense of urgency without frightening your workforce? And I think that's where leadership really plays an absolutely vital role.
So let me ask that question. How do you do it?
Well, I think, first of all, acknowledging the fact that it's there. Right. Second of all, showing that it's not new is good, old is bad. How are you going to put that together? How to build that mindset in the organization where you're going to try and figure it out together? I wrote a book called The Phoenix and the Unicorn, and I was getting a little tired of the unicorn stories. Every conference you went to, it was Uber this, Airbnb that. But most companies are never going to be Airbnb. And I wanted to find phoenixes. And these are companies that can reinvent themselves, that actually go through difficult times, but become a stronger version of themselves. And I really believe after a decade of unicorn applause, we're now going to have a decade of potential phoenixes out there. And I think a big part as a leader in such a phoenix transformation is to actually give your workforce, your people, that sense of we're going to do this together.
Right.
I had the chance to be very close to the transformation of Walmart over the last couple of years.
Okay.
Walmart is 1.6 million employees. It's the largest employer in the world. And to see a company like Walmart not just come in and say, digital is going to change everything, e-commerce is a game changer, and most people are going to be replaced by robots. No, they double down and invest in their people. They figure out how to use the talent and use the people that they have to actually become a big part of helping that transformation actually work. But it's not easy. I mean, a big part of the stores in the US of Walmart are being turned into e-commerce infrastructure. A lot of the people who are customer-facing today might work in e-commerce or last mile or delivery.
Right.
But you can clearly see there the difference between, say, an Amazon and a Walmart. Walmart really does that by doubling down on their people and, you know, acknowledging that never normal, but really figuring out how to use the power of, you know, their values and their workforce to be very relevant in that never normal.
It's a really interesting example, that, isn't it? Because that's private sector doing what private sector probably does really well. What about government? What about the public sector?
Yeah, in essence, I think Walmart is a very peculiar example because it's publicly traded. You can see the stock price every single day, but it's still controlled by the Walton family. And one of the things that I've seen is that it helps if you can put a long-term perspective on things. And that's what the family ownership of Walmart actually does. There's so many companies that are just, you know, quarterly focused, you know, this fiscal year, then it's very difficult to actually do a transformation of that style. It happens. I mean, take Microsoft. That's a great example of a company that's done that, you know, publicly, you know, traded, very, very visible. And they've been able to really transform into a phoenix. But going back to Walmart, I think that might be inspiration for public sector because in public sector, you, by the very nature, are thinking long term. You can play that long game. But unfortunately, you don't see that enough. And I think it's that sense of urgency, which is probably not there yet. Mm-hmm. The fact that, of course, we have a political system where you have that, you know, 4 or 5 year cycle where everything changes again doesn't really help there. But in essence, I think in a public sector, you have all the opportunities to be able to really nurture that reinvention for the long game.
The ISF collaborates with our members across global industries, government bodies, and cybersecurity enterprises. We offer trusted resources to help organizations adapt and thrive in an ever-changing world. To learn more about the post-pandemic future of work, download our brochure, Remote Working and Cyber Risk. Become an ISF member today. Get in touch directly with Steve at steve.durbin@securityforum.org. or on LinkedIn.
You've touched on technology. I mean, you talked about, you know, artificial intelligence. Do you think we're becoming too dependent upon technology?
I personally don't, but I'm a technologist at heart, so I still get excited about everything that happens. You do get to the point where, you know, even myself, I realize what we have built is we're standing on the shoulders of giants, so we're keep building on top of. And if some of the underlying mechanisms break down, well, then we see how difficult it is. I mean, during the pandemic, I'm sure you had the same, but in our house, if the internet went down during the pandemic, well, then all hell broke loose. Yep. Right? So you become extremely dependent on technology. It has to work. There is a zero tolerance for digital failure. On the other hand, I do believe that we're actually getting to the point where we can really show the potential, where we can really use these tools to become more productive. And that's where I get so excited about something like AI, for example. Mm-hmm. I mean, you know, over the years, digital has in many ways been a disappointment in terms of productivity. We have more tools than ever before, but are we really that much more productive? It's questionable. I mean, most of us still use Microsoft Word like we did with our own mechanical typewriter. The only difference is we don't have whiteout anymore. But I think we're now getting to the point where the combination of man plus machine, where we really see this as productivity enhancers, I think we might see an enormous change for the first time maybe in 30, 40 years of digital technologies. I think getting to digital, becoming normal was step one. That's your base camp. I think we now have the potential to really leverage what is out there. So I still get that excitement. But I do realize more and more, you know, if it doesn't work, it's a challenge. I take ChatGPT as an example.
Right.
When it came out, you know, 30th of November last year, I think first people like you and me started using it. Then massively students started to use that. And I've seen statistics that 60 to 70% of the papers and dissertations and, you know, theses in the academic year 22-23 were written using generative AI.
Yeah.
I think that's an underestimate. I think it's closer to 90 plus percent. But then again, you saw that in the beginning, ChatGPT was overwhelmed by, you know, the enthusiasm. People started using it so much that sometimes the servers went down. And one of my friends is a teacher, and she said, I literally had one of my students that came in and said, I cannot turn in my homework because ChatGPT was down. There you see how dependent we become on technology.
But from the security standpoint, of course, that introduces a whole range of different issues. I mean, certainly talking to some of our members when ChatGPT, as you say, was exploding, what I noticed was they were falling into two camps. There was the camp that said, okay, let's just experiment with it, let's use it. And there was the other camp that said, no, it's not at a point where we can allow it, if you like, to run wild across the organization.
Yes.
Because we haven't got the policies, the processes, the procedures in place to actually monitor it. So we're going to step back for a while, watch, wait and see. And now, interestingly, some of those are beginning to feel that perhaps they're behind the game.
Mm.
And for me, that's just a reflection on the speed at which technology is now changing. So if you've got any advice for people who perhaps see some of these things evolving and think, ooh, maybe I'll just sit back for a moment and wait. Should they dive in? What should they do?
I mean, the typical S curve that we see when something is strange and starts to grow and then flips, becomes normal. The steepness of that S curve is just getting, incredible.
Right.
And, generative AI is a great example of that. I think we're at a point in time where the experimentation we have to do to understand this is more important than ever before. We have to spend time to sense and try and experiment. And the idea of let's wait it out and then we'll see, I don't think that applies anymore to this never normal. Gen AI is a great example. I think the opportunities is, vast, because for a long time, what we've done in companies is focused on the data side of things and the structured data. But how much of the information in a company is structured? 20%, 30%, 60, 70, maybe 80 or 90% is unstructured. It's the emails, it's the documents, it's the PowerPoints that are on SharePoints or on share drives everywhere. And I think we're now seeing that we've pretty much figured out the whole governance around data, but we're going to have to figure out that whole governance around these content flows. And we've largely ignored that for, quite a while. But I think now, what are you using to train large language? How are you going to combine your own intellectual property with these large languages? How are you going to make sure that none of it gets out? Mm-hmm. We're going to have to deal with that governance of content, unstructured flows. And that's a whole new kettle of fish that we have to understand. New technologies, new mechanisms, new ways of dealing with that. And I think it's going to open up a huge opportunity in terms of thinking about risk and thinking about security in that context. So I don't think you can ignore this. This is the biggest thing that I have ever seen in 30 years in IT. And if you're not on top of this, you're going to be behind.
So you talked there about the need for a change to the governance inside the organization. We're seeing around the world the evolution of regulation. So across the EU, for instance, we have the EU's AI Act. But different countries, different regions are taking different stances. If I look at the UK, for instance, it's probably slightly more relaxed in terms of some of the regulation that they want to bring in there versus what's happening, say, in the EU. What is your take on the need for regulation, first of all, and then consistency?
I think it's going to be one of the big themes of the next decade, because I think what has happened is that in Europe, GDPR was seen as a huge success by the regulators. If you ask the companies, I'm not so sure. If you ask the consumers, I think you get a different view. The whole idea of protecting privacy was absolutely brilliant and necessary. But then again, many companies spent a lot of money implementing GDPR. And from a consumer point of view, you feel you're clicking on more consent forms than ever before, and you get more spam than ever before.
Right.
So I think there's a disconnect there between the noble intentions of this regulation and then the execution in reality. I think we have to be very careful. We're not going to do the same in a world of AI where, let's be honest, Europe has been working on their AI regulation for quite some time. Mm. They actually postponed it because they realized that Gen AI was happening so quickly and it was so pervasive that, they were going to look foolish if they would brought out something that was already bypassed the moment it came out. And we get to a very strange situation where, on the one hand, you can clearly see that you need to regulate this because it's now the Wild West out there. Mm-hmm. But the technology is moving so quickly and is advancing so rapidly that it's, I pity the regulators who have to figure out how to deal with that. I think as a company, as an organization, you're going to deal with that compliance, but I don't think you should wait. I think you should start thinking about how you're going to organize this yourself without waiting for that final regulatory environment to come out. And it's going to be something that has real economic consequences. Mm. I got an email recently from one of the larger consulting firms that I've been working with for a very long time. I've been doing work with them for the last decade. And they sent me an email recently saying, could you please sign off that none of the information you've ever received from us, no PDF, PowerPoint, email, has ever been used to train a larger language model. And I'm an individual. I could say, yes, I can. But if you're a company, if you're a large pharmaceutical company or a large retailer, and every single one of your employees has to, you know, be compliant that none of the information that you've ever received from one of these vendors has been used to train, how are we going to organize that? So I think it would be really foolish to wait until the final set of regulation is out there. I think we have to start now, because I don't think you can avoid using this. This is a tool that is so powerful to help us with productivity, we can't postpone it. But waiting for regulation to finalize and crystallize, I think then you're absolutely going to be too late. So you have to act now.
And I think one of the challenges with that acting now from a chief executive perspective, from a board member perspective, is that there is just so much regulation and increased focus on compliance that you have to contend with. You know, do you have the headspace, the knowledge, the understanding to be able to deal with some of these things? I mean, certainly some of the board members that I talk to, you know, would say to me, rightly or wrongly, that they don't have time for it. They don't understand it.
Yeah.
And they do understand that they're liable for GDPR. They understand that they're going to be liable for NIS2, for instance, if they're in the critical infrastructure space. And so AI is something that they feel that they can perhaps push off a little bit because they don't have the capability or the time. What sort of advice have you got for them?
So I joined the board of a bank 3 years ago, so start of COVID. It is honestly one of the most difficult things I've ever done in my entire life, because with my entrepreneurial background and startup background, joining a world of compliance and risk and audit was, I've had to study a lot, but I really enjoy it. And they made a deliberate choice, you know, in the bank to hire people with my background, because they felt that the world of digital and data and, you know, is moving so quickly, they needed to address that also on the board level. I mean, the bank is doing really well. Our mobile app is in the top three worldwide. So we're, you know, really on the money there. But what happened is we actually even changed the governance inside the board. When I joined the board, there were three committees, Comp and Ben, an audit committee, and a risk committee. Mm-hmm. And we'd spend a lot of time to really, you know, manage risk and do the audit function in the way that we've always done it.
Right.
But there was a belief also at the board level that on the one hand, there is more regulation coming that is outside the classic, you know, financial risk mechanisms. Also, that we needed to spend more time on innovation. We now actually have a fourth committee. I'm not saying you need more committees, but we actually have a new committee, which I foolishly suggested to call it the Disruption Committee, but that was a bad idea. We call it the Innovation Committee, and we do two things. First of all, we look at all the rules, compliance, that are often non-financial risk related, you know, things like cyber, business continuity, and there's a tsunami of regulation that is coming our way. But we also look at innovations that we cannot afford to miss. We look at things where we have to double down. We have that mechanism in the board now where we look at the radar of things that are really important for us to understand. And we have to figure out not just what is relevant for us as a bank and an insurance company, but also where we have to double down and make sure that we can execute that in the fastest possible way. And I think, honestly, more and more boards are going to need to figure out how to build the skills and the mechanisms and the place to discuss these things that are not just compliance with the tsunami, but also the innovations that you cannot afford to miss. And I think, honestly, that's going to change the dialogue in the board quite a bit.
Some interesting thoughts there, Peter. Always a pleasure to talk to you. Always a pleasure to hear some of these different ideas and certainly some of the really solid examples that you've been giving our listeners. So thank you very much indeed for taking the time today.
A pleasure, Steve. Really nice to be here and good luck with the rest of the forum.
If you found value in the conversation today between Peter Hinson and Steve Durbin, please rate and review this episode and share it. Check out all our media and resources. All of it is there to support you at securityforum.org. Become an ISF member today. Don't miss the ISF Analyst Insight podcast, sharing conversations with members about the real-world applications of ISF research. The ISF podcast is produced by Talkbox Productions and Tavia Gilbert. Thanks for listening.